Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helmwedge. You know, over the 10 years we've done Thinking Out Loud, we've done several programs about historical preservation, the important people of our history, and also buildings that have an importance to the history of Mid-Missouri. But tonight we're going to talk about both. One of the most, if not the single most famous person ever to come out of the city of Columbia, a major historical figure, Blind Boone, and restoration efforts for his home here in Columbia. It's taken a very long time to get this project going. It's something that's been talked about for years, but we're finally seeing some real progress made. And we'll get an update from Clyde Ruffin this evening. Thinking Out Loud is next here on KBIA. It's KBIA 91.3 FM, Thinking Out Loud, and tonight we're going to be talking about some of the historical preservation that's going on around Columbia, specifically preserving some of our town's African-American history, and perhaps the most famous person ever to come from Columbia, the wonderful composer and pianist John W. Blind Boone. And we're going to talk about restoration efforts around his home in downtown Columbia, or near downtown Columbia. And our guest this evening is Clyde Ruffin. He is the chair of the Boone Heritage Foundation Board, in addition to having taught for many years at the theater department here in Columbia, serving still as the pastor of the Second Missionary Baptist Church here in Columbia, and serving on the Columbia City Council as well. A busy guy. Clyde, it's always wonderful to have you here. Thank you for taking the time today.
It's always good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit, first of all. We've got a couple of different things going on that I want to talk about, and there were some recent events around a historic neighborhood in Columbia known as Sharp End that we're going to talk about a little bit later. But let's start by talking about the Blind Boone home. This is an idea that's been out there for a very long time. The house has been there, obviously, all along, and people who kind of knew their Columbia history knew where it was, and you could drive by and see it, but it was a little bit on the ramshackle side. The idea of getting this house preserved and making something that we could show our kids and grandkids and teach them about the history of Columbia and about Boone has been out there for a while. It's taken a while, but I understand there's being some good progress made now on getting this house restored.
Yeah, it's definitely being restored right now. We're making great progress. It has been a long journey, almost 16 years since the city purchased the house from Harold Warren, who owned Warren Funeral Chapel.
And let's talk a little bit about that process. And why has it taken this long? Because I know a few years ago it sounded like there was starting to be some progress, and then it kind of got held up a little bit.
Well, there are two things. One, of course, the most important thing is that restoring any historic home takes a lot of money.
Sure.
It's much more expensive to restore a historic home than it is to build a new one. And with the Boone home, it had fallen into such disrepair over the years and had been so neglected that it really had to be completely gutted and rebuilt from the inside. And that has taken quite a bit of time. We have gone through many, many fundraisers over the years, and we were able to accumulate a substantial amount of money, but not nearly enough to restore the house. And at one point, we applied for a Save America's Treasures grant, which was our main thrust to acquire the money. But it came at exactly the same time as there was the economic downfall, and that particular federal program was canceled. And we had applied for $250,000 for that program, and so we didn't get it. And so we continued to do fundraisers, to solicit private donations, and we had a brick campaign where people could purchase engraved pavers for the garden, mm-hmm. and that we just all of that was ongoing, but nothing was generated that would really fund the restoration of the house until Mayor McDavid proposed that the city allocate a certain amount of money from their surplus funds for the restoration of the house. He said, we own the house, we've got to do it, and that was 2 years ago.
Okay. Talk about where it is now as far as a timeline for it being open and us being able to go inside and look around and see what it's all about?
Well, that's a very good question, and everyone asked me that question, and I said, and I always tell everyone that, you know, there are a lot of different ideas about what's finished.
Yeah, finished is kind of a nebulous term. Yeah,
when is it really, really finished? As a matter of fact, if you want to go in today, I can take you in there, but they're restoring the floors. I mean, one of the things I shared with you earlier was that when we decided to use drywall rather than preserve the historic plaster, which had horsehair in it.
Oh, my.
And was crumbling, we had to take the wood lath off. And so when we took the wood lath off the studs, we found that the wood lath was holding the house up. So the house started to lean a little. And so the entire house had to be reframed from the inside. And all the heating, all the air conditioning, all the electrical, all the plumbing, there was no plumbing. All of that had to be redone. We're also, you know, incorporating some technology so that you can hear his music all over the house and so that sure. you can watch the documentary on the monitors and things like that. But all that has to be hidden so that it does not distract from the historical character of the house. So all of that's been done. But the major part that needs to be completed, of course, is the landscaping. There's an extensive garden that will go around the house that will also serve as an outdoor meeting place or a place for concerts.
Nice.
And so that's going to take us into the fall, I'm
okay.
sure.
Okay. Clyde Ruffin, our guest. Clyde, for people maybe who are new to town, let's talk a little bit about the history of this house. And I guess maybe to start with, for the people who maybe aren't familiar, who was Blind Boone?
Wow, that's a great question. Blind Boone was an amazing pianist, composer. He's known primarily for being a ragtime composer, but he was also a jazz composer, and the majority of his music was actually classical. He is most noted for bringing the Negro spiritual to the concert stage and mixing that with more popular tunes. And so he was also a philanthropist in this area, helped many churches, also helped build the chapel at Columbia College, which was then Christian College. And the most amazing thing about him is that he is the son of a contraband slave woman, Rachel Boone, and a white bugler, a young man's maybe 18 and 19. We've been able to trace and find his name. That's all we know about him, who fathered him and then, of course, disappeared. And so some people believe that he inherited his musical gift from his father. But he was blinded as an infant because he contracted brain fever. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the medical practice was to relieve the pressure. They removed his eyes.
Okay, yeah, and right. that's... So what they knew to do
that's
back
what they
in those
knew
days.
To do. Yeah. Right. But he was so gifted as a child that his neighbors actually sent him to St. Louis to go to the School for the Blind, which is where he heard the music for the first time. And, you know, he was, there's a long story about, you know, his early musical career, but he eventually, what catapulted him to fame was that a man by the name of John Lang Jr. heard him play and invited him to come to Columbia to play for a Christmas concert to benefit his church, which was Second Baptist Church.
Right.
And when he came here and he played, and then he ended up doing concerts with another blind musician by the name of Blind Tom, who had been a slave as well. And John Lang became his manager, and the rest is history.
And I want to talk about that history if for no other reason than I want you to kind of put in perspective. I think people maybe get that this was somebody from Columbia and somebody that we talk about around here, and they see the Blind Boone Center. They talk about the Blind Boone House and other things. So there's a recognition of the name. But talk about just how big a deal he was.
I didn't find out until we made the decision to submit the paperwork for his home to be placed on the National Historic Register.
I see.
And in order to do that, we had to solicit letters of support. And letters came from all over the world. in support of designating his house as a house, as a structure worthy of national significance. So they came from Sweden, they came from England, they came from literally all over the world. So his music is known, even though he never traveled outside of the United States. Many, he has many followers and many musicologists who understand the significance of what he was able to do.
Talk about, Clyde, the importance, why it's important to keep this home restored beyond just the fact that Blind Boone was a very famous person and this was his home. Talk a little bit about the history of the structure itself, the building, and why preserving it is important.
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One is that the home is built on land that was previously owned by John Batiste Lang, Sr., who was a man of Creole descent who became a very successful businessman even before the Emancipation Proclamation here in Columbia. He was originally from Baton Rouge and came here with his wife and children who were still slaves that were owned by James Stewart, who was the president of the University of Missouri. And so he became very successful, owned the first grocery store in Columbia, a butcher shop and a fresh food market, and used the money from that acquired some contracts with the military to supply meat to the military, got quite a bit of money from that, and used that to purchase property in Columbia, and at one time owned all of the land between 3rd and 5th Street and between Walnut and Cherry. It was all owned by John Lang. And so John Lang's youngest daughter married Blind Boone.
I see.
And it is believed that that John Lang Jr., his son, built the house for Blind Boone and his sister, his wife, as a wedding present.
Okay.
Sometime between 1888 and 1892.
And so the land that it's on is historic, and the people involved with its building beyond just Blind Boone, a remarkable history. And to foreshadow just a little bit some of the stuff we're going to be talking about in a little while here, that neighborhood that you mentioned was the neighborhood basically known as Sharp End, or included a part of the neighborhood when we talk about Sharp End for people's. Just to put it in perspective, have in your mind, we're talking about the area around the post office, the Tribune building. There's a pizza shop, Tony's Pizza there. It's that general area,
the
right?
The garage.
The garage, yes.
Garagezilla.
that enormous, wonderful, awful garage, depending on one's perspective, yes.
That's right. So,
Clyde Ruffin is with us. He is the chair of the Blind Boone Heritage Foundation Board, and we're talking about the restoration of the Blind Boone home here in Columbia, as we've been hearing quite a bit of progress made after a very long wait in recent times, and we're looking forward to seeing that. You mentioned this before, Clyde, but I want to hear a little bit more about the garden, because I think some of the really exciting stuff that's been talked about that I've heard recently about the home is some of what they're talking about doing with the outside, not just with the building, but with the rest of the property.
Yes, the house itself is not that large,
right.
You know, but one of the things we know is that it was an amazing achievement for an African American living in Columbia at that time to have a house that would have been seen as very opulent.
Okay.
But compared to other Victorian homes, it's small. It's small, and so we recognized early on that if we want to not use the house as a museum with full of old furniture where you just walk in once and there's no reason to go back again.
Yeah.
The vision has always been to use it as a community center. And so there will be some historic photographs. You'll be able to hear his music. We have a piano that will be in there. We have a few artifacts we've collected and some furniture upstairs. But the downstairs is all open space that'll be available for small concerts and readings and gatherings of various kinds. And so it's still small, so small that it will not accommodate a large gathering.
Yeah.
So the vision has always been, especially during the warm months, to be able to extend the usable area out to outside. And so They've had many iterations of what the garden should be and how it should look. We have a wonderful design right now that includes an outdoor performance space, lighting and many wonderful plants and areas to sit and read and reflect and or have small concerts outside as well. So it's very nice. We've been selling engraved pavers for years, and hopefully all those people will live to see their pavers installed in the tribute garden. And the great thing is that the garden will be dedicated to Wina Fae Elbert.
Oh, great. Yeah.
We started off with it as just a tribute garden dedicated to people who have overcome great challenges, if you wanted to buy a brick in honor of someone or something like that. But after Wina Fae passed, because it was her original vision to purchase the house, we decided that we would rededicate the garden as the Wina Fae Memorial Gardens at the Boone House.
I think this would be an appropriate time to raise this topic. If somebody's interested in this, if they say, well, that's a great idea, I want to buy a brick, I want to be a part of this, I want to make a contribution, Wina Fae was my friend, I want to help honor her, how do people get plugged in with this project?
Well, certainly they can contact me directly through the City Council. That's the easiest way to find me. They can also contact the Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Okay.
That's another very direct way to get to us.
Dynamite. It's Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Hellwedge. Clyde Ruffin, our guest, in addition to representing the First Ward of Columbia on the City Council and having taught at the theater department here at the university for many years, he is a part of the Foundation Board, the Heritage Foundation Board for the J.W. Blind Boone Home, which is currently in the process of being restored, one of the really historic buildings here in Columbia. Clyde, let's move on a little bit. As we mentioned, this was part of an entire neighborhood with an awful lot of history to it. And talk first of all, as we talk about Sharp End, there were some very recent events that went in to kind of help make sure that even though there aren't a lot of the original buildings left, in fact, I think just one, that this neighborhood's not going to be forgotten, and why it was important isn't going to be forgotten.
Yeah, it's very important because it, again, just like the Boone home, it was an era in which African-American entrepreneurs thrived in this area and created a vibrant community that surrounded this business district. Many cities had these African-American business districts that were prevalent during the time of segregation, when you couldn't easily go into movie theaters, you couldn't go into restaurants, you couldn't go in various places and get the services that you needed. So African-American people created their own businesses in their own communities and supported those businesses. And so the Sharp End was that. And but of course, you know, urban renewal comes along. People grow up, they move away. The children don't want to inherit the business from their parents, and things fall apart. And so, but it's an important part of our history. And the interesting thing is that there are very few photographs of that area. There are some, but not like most people would think.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings are gone, and so it's great to at least have this memorial. A plaque that's been installed there in front of the ready offices, documenting that this is the Sharp End area, but the Boone home and also Second Baptist were a part of that immediate area, and so those structures are preserved as well. And so there are plans that have been talked about for years of creating an African American history trail that begins at Douglas School. And comes through that area, calls the Sharp End, goes by the Boone House, mm-hmm. goes by Second Baptist Church, goes up to the Columbia Cemetery, where there's the monument for James T. Scott and a monument to slaves that are buried there in unmarked graves, and Confederate soldiers are also buried there, and ending up at the Flat Branch Creek.
Okay.
So there's a long-range vision for this area to really recapture and celebrate the history.
I've talked about this with Elliot Battle. You mentioned the school and Douglas High School, which before segregation was the black school in Columbia is mm-hmm. now still an active school, the alternative high school here in Columbia. And if I can throw a small editorial in, does some, from an educational standpoint, some fantastic work. And if people are interested in education and you're not familiar with what's happening at Douglas, you ought to be, because they're doing some great stuff there. But he talked about how what was considered the black community changed with desegregation and not having the school and so forth. And from your perspective, talk a little bit about that. And obviously, because of the history, Douglas School still a major part of the history of Columbia, but it did change things.
Yeah, you know, many times people underestimate the importance of culture in terms of shaping identity, shaping one's sense of self or sense of value. There is something that happens in protected environments where that allows children to be nurtured in a very unique way before they're exposed to the larger society.
Yeah.
That's the polite way to put it, okay?
Sure.
And that happens, and it happens in the African-American churches. It happened in schools where there was an abundance of African-American teachers, and those young people who go through that experience receive a kind of reinforcement that is difficult to come by when they are removed from those kinds of environments. But we also know that separate but equal does not work.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But there was some inherent value in that. I can remember even as a child growing up in Kansas City, so I'm not from here, that as I would walk from my house to Central High School, mm-hmm. That I would walk by a house that was owned by a doctor right up the street. You know, he was the only doctor I knew, but I knew he had the most impressive house in our neighborhood.
Sure.
And that was important for me to see that. I would walk by the barbershop. I would walk by the church. I would walk by the bookstore. And they were all African-American owned businesses. And it gave me a sense of, I can do this, you know. I can do this. You know, I can go to college. I can do something, because my parents hadn't gone to college. And so it gave me that sense of possibility.
Sure. We had a program where we talked about the topic of race and the church recently with my good friend Clanton Dawson just a few months ago. And on the one hand, there is a benefit to some of what he's working on and trying to do and establishing a church that is multiracial. At the same time, I mean, what we were just talking about there of having, I don't want to say protected necessarily, but having that society, having that community that you're around, does have its importance. Talk about the role in the history, the African American history of Columbia, of the churches, because it wasn't just the one church, although you're obviously affiliated with Second Baptist, but several of the other churches around downtown.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the early history is what's certainly most important, which was that immediately after the emancipation, African Americans immediately started to establish churches. The founding members of Second Baptist actually came out of First Baptist, where they had been allowed to participate in the worship. They could do everything. There's even some indication that one of them was allowed to preach. They were certainly allowed to sing. So they were not disconnected from the life of the church in that way, even though they were still slaves. Okay. But immediately on emancipation, they applied for letters of dismission is what we call them in the Baptist church, so that they could leave and start their own church, which is what they did. As a matter of fact, the first meetings were held in the house of John Lang. That he allowed them to use his house as a meeting place. But what's most what I wanted to say is that for the African American community, the churches that they established were also used as schools to educate the children, because the children didn't have access to other schools. And mm-hmm. so they would build the church, they would teach it, they would use it as a school all during the week, and then use it for the church services on the weekend. And it's interesting to note that the first school for black children, Cummins Academy, was also started in John Batiste Lang's home.
Where exactly was his house?
We don't know.
Okay.
We don't know. Hmm. And Charles Cummins was his son-in-law.
Okay.
Married to one of his daughters. And so Cummins Academy was in the house. Church people were meeting in the house.
Sure.
And when he built the first building for the church, it was in Cummins Academy, which was okay. on 3rd and Ash Street.
All right. And how long has 2nd been there?
How long have we been in this location?
Right.
1894.
Okay. Okay. So it's got quite a history to it as well. Let me wrap up as we're visiting here with Clyde Ruffin, Blind Boone Home, the restoration. We've talked about the preservation of at least the memory of and the plaque to commemorate Sharp End. This could be a long, broad discussion, I suppose, but what else is out there that people don't know about that needs to be on the list of, we should be talking about this when we talk about preserving our history?
Wow, that's a great question. I hate to be the spokesperson for that, but I think we've made...
In the opinion of Clyde Ruffin, one man.
I think we're making great progress. Great progress with the restoration of the Boone home, mm-hmm. of course, Second Baptist Church, the plaque for the Sharp End. The great thing about rededicating the Sharp End is that the history has been written. It's now accessible.
Okay.
It's been written down, so it's no longer just word of mouth. It has been written down, which is great.
Well, a lot going on, and it's wonderful to see. It's important for all the young people in our community, I think, to know this. One can understand why an African-American person would want their kids to know about this history, to see why this was important. But I think for all of our kids to understand, you know, my kids grew up in Columbia, and it's cool that they know about this, this stuff. And so for our future to see this history being preserved is a wonderful thing. Again, if you are interested in making a contribution to the preservation of the house, of purchasing one of the bricks in the garden, Clyde said just get in touch with him, and you can do that through the city council or go to the Columbia Convention and Visitors Bureau website or call up the CVB, and they can help you out with that. Clyde Ruffin, we appreciate your time an awful lot. It's great to talk to you and get caught up on all this.
It's great to be here.
And that is our program for this evening, Thinking Out Loud here on KBIA. Big thanks to Clyde Ruffin for being so generous with his time and filling us in on what's going on with a lot of historical preservation efforts here in the city of Columbia, and we appreciate it a lot. Remember, Thinking Out Loud is on Facebook and on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at KBIA Morning, and you can find the Facebook page. Just look for KBIA Thinking Out Loud and follow us on social media. We'll be back next Tuesday with another Thinking Out Loud here on 91.3 FM. Till then, for tonight's guest, Clyde Ruffin, and for associate producer Trevor Harris, I'm Darren Hellwedge. Have a great evening.